Hi, this is Michael Harrison. Welcome to another installment of The Talker Show here on Talkers Radio, a program in which we talk to members of the talk media, talk radio, talk television, internet, satellite, and the kind of people that you read about in Talkers Magazine. And today's program features two distinguished people. The second half of the program will be my friend and colleague, sports talk show host from WFAN, Richard Neer. Richard also was and is well-known historically as one of the pioneers of the album rock format. He was a DJ at WNEW-FM for many decades and somebody I have known for most of my career. And he'll be here the second half of the program. We're going to kick the program off in conversation with Holland Cook. Holland Cook is one of the most respected radio consultants in the industry. His career goes back to the days when he was a top 40 DJ. And he made a national reputation for himself as the PD of All News Radio WTOP in Washington a couple of decades ago. And ever since, he's been one of the most respected consultants in the radio industry. This conversation with Holland Cook was recorded in a car outside a Starbucks. He and I were meeting for coffee, had a conversation, said, hey, you know, we should capture some of this. So we went out to the car where I had a digital recording device, and we conducted this conversation. Holland Cook, how has the role of the consultant changed in the radio business over, say, the last 10 or 20 years?
Even before that, since deregulation run amok in 1996, there were already too many radio stations under one roof for management to manage. And even as far back as the 90s, station owners were hiring me to listen to 1470. Well, yeah, we don't have time. They were, as we used to say back then, adding RAM. Today the expression is we're adding bandwidth. But they're managing more than they can manage. They don't have time to listen. Often when things go wrong on the air, the first time they know about it is when a concerned listener calls the receptionist. And that's if listeners are concerned enough to call the receptionist. So it was already more than they could handle. And that's not the best reason to hire a consultant if you own a radio station. What you're trying to do is not start from scratch, avoid experimentation, modify success templates that have worked elsewhere, turn ratings or not ratings into more revenue, develop the local talent. And that is the part of consulting that pertains to radio stations. But increasingly, my work is here on what we used to call the internet, the transparent, almost invisible other bandwidth. This thing in the pocket that we used to call a phone is now what you for years have been calling the media station. So increasingly, the content that I'm helping people fashion might not even go through a transmitter.
Well, how do you feel then at this point observing this relationship between the transmitter style of broadcasting, or what we call in the business the stick, and the internet style of broadcasting, which has both broadcasters related to the stick on it, as well as non-stick, or as my son Matthew and I termed it years ago, stickless. Matter of fact, we even bought a website called stickless.com. That was the original name of Podjockey, was Stickless.
Well done.
And unfortunately, nobody knew what we were talking about. Even in the industry, a lot of people don't know the term stick anymore. A lot of the things that guys like you and I grew up with as terms and as part of the radio culture is not even known.
I feel like a broken record. I wince when I hear a weather forecast. Tomorrow will be a carbon copy of today. And nobody currently aged 25 to 54 ever touched carbon paper. Right. So there's that. But the short answer to your question about the intersection of radio and the internet is it is both wildly opportune and extremely urgent not to reduce the worth of AM, FM, TV transmitters to incumbency. But that's a lot of what we have going on for us. I just hooked up the Roku box at home. If you have one of those, or if you have Apple TV, or any of these things that let you put apps on your TV screen, one of my apps is Netflix. So now the TV listings are really less interesting. Radio has not exploited this on-demand habit that users are demonstrating by binge-watching House of Cards and all the other ways they now choose to consume media. So it's urgent that radio goes there. And when I say incumbency, the two living generations who control most retail spending in the USA today grew up with AM, FM, TV transmitter consumption habits. We are going to die off. And we're already wandering off to the thing in the pocket. And it was several years ago at a talker's event where somebody speaking said, raise your hand if you have a phone in your pocket. And everybody's hand went up. And then they said, put your hands down. And they said, now raise your hand if you have a radio in your pocket. And only Art Volo raised his hand. So it's not just generational. It's habitual. People, boomers our age, are already going there. The current discussion Commissioner Pai is leading at the FCC about the lack of quality on the AM band acknowledges that all of these new devices are contributing to the degradation of over-the-air broadcasting. So I think we've got to be in both places, but it is urgent that we do so while we are still the incumbent media. And as all of this Edison research has shown us for years, there is no, repeat, no other companion medium that drives traffic to the internet better than AM FM radio.
But are we as an industry, meaning we as AM FM radio industry, as opposed to we, the bigger industry of broadcasting on the internet, are we hastening the demise of our we-ness, of our, you know, AM FM hood by driving traffic to the internet and being obsessed with the internet? Yes, I have been an early, you know, espouser of getting onto the digital space, and I did coin the term and define the concept of media station, which I completely believe in. But as a person running a trade publication whose core readers are still tied into the economy and the culture of AM/FM broadcasting, I have to ask that question: are we working at odds with our own well-being?
Well, you have to ask that question twice because you actually run two trade publications. One of them talks very much to people who do what's now called spoken word content, and the other is for music radio. You deserve two answers to that question because you have spoken so passionately about how radio has to regain the juju, the mojo, the ownership of the music culture, and as you've put it, to the extent that talk radio has taken some ownership over the political conversation.
And sports talk.
And sports talk as well. Not that these conversations aren't competing with other platform conversations, same topic. But let me give you the two-part answer. For the spoken word kind of radio, it's opportune, and I don't believe we're chasing our listeners away by acknowledging the other platforms. It's all we can do to keep up with them as they migrate there. And when NBC has the Olympics, we've figured out that some games are on NBC, some games are on CNBC, some games are on MSNBC, some games are on a website. You know, we can figure all of that out. I work with radio stations who move baseball games around depending on whether it's a day game or a night game, and they'll train people to understand where to find the game. I think it's a different answer for music radio, because once you get that toothpaste out of the tube, it's going to be hard to stuff it back in. Thus the conversation we're hearing rejuvenated lately about music discovery. After decades of the darn consultant homogenizing the safe list down to the burnout 300 for fear of tune out, we realize that that's what's tuning them out when they hear something cool that they haven't heard before. And when we were young DJs, the other station we were competing with hadn't added the song yet. Maybe they just didn't want to, but we made it seem special because two or three times over the song that we were playing and they weren't, we'd say, WPRO exclusive. And it made it special.
Well, there's a very fine line for music programmers between playing stiffs that people don't want to hear in your effort to play new music or obscure music or eclectic music.
You know, when you hear that now, the Casey Kasem American Top 40 Hours from the 70s are back in syndication. I heard a show from this week in 1975 over the weekend, and I thought of that instantly because there were these turntable hits, these stiffs, these follow-up songs to a great song. Starbucks sang Moonlight Feels Right. Then came, what,
I can't remember.
Incense and peppermints begat Barefoot in Baltimore. And they got the ad. The uni rep came in and gave us the follow-up, and it stiffed after a couple
of weeks. Well, the fact of the matter is, and you have to remember, you're talking to somebody who was involved in the creation of the radio and record charts, somebody who redesigned the Billboard charts back in 1980, and that began the modern era of Billboard charts. It goes back to my redesign, and somebody who has put out tip sheets in the rock and roll golden days, put out a publication called Good Phone Weekly, and now we're doing the only original charts in the industry at this point.
Do you have remorse for charts the way they used to be done?
Well, no, I actually think the way charts used to be done are better than the way charts are done today. That's why we're doing original charts. Do I miss them? Oh, I see what you're saying. Remorse for having been involved in that.
No, do you have remorse for the hype of the old chart methodology? Because it only really made sense to add a record when it was on its way down.
Well, this is something that, well, first of all, let me make my point. My point is that I've learned more than anyone that there are only a handful of real hits at any given time in any genre, and that you have to play those songs or talk about those books or any number of things that we chart with a tremendous amount of insight and finesse, or you will be driving away audience and customers by playing stiffs, because there aren't that many hits to begin with. However, properly programmed, stiffs can be attractive. They can be potent on the radio, and we used to call those turntable hits.
Right.
And there's something to be said for that, and that is a very difficult thing to chart accurately if you don't understand the nuance and the flavor and the culture of what it is to program a radio station. And a lot of the guys today don't have that, because I find a lot of today's radio is being programmed from the corporate board down. And what do they know about turntable hits?
Well, even when I was hearing the turntable hits toward the bottom of the top 40 that Casey was counting down in 1975 and was replayed this past weekend, they all sounded like music of the era. All of that mid-70s stuff kind of had the Rockford Files theme sound to it, and that was that optimistic, forward-looking 70s mojo played out in music. In Cousin Brucey's autobiography, he talked about 1968 when the music was crying, because we were, you know, as a society, we were sad, we were angry about Vietnam and all of that. So there is a context, but if you pull back and take even the wider angle shot, we're just talking about the playlist. And what distinguished great radio stations back in the day, and will even more so today, with corporate radio so crammed down and syndicated and unlocal, is, grab the armrest, consultant buzzword, curation. It's everything we do is storytelling. And it's what you do with that playlist and the other stuff that you wrap around the playlist that is going to differentiate your station. People have already figured it out. And when I say app in the following sentence, it's not pejorative, but there seem to be two kinds of stations now. There's apps and there's remarkable. And there's nothing wrong with being the app if people understand that when they push 105.1, they get continuous country. You can train them that you are that app in their dashboard. But there's something special about raising 700,000 pounds of food in a local annual radio station food drive to feed the local hungry that makes you remarkable. And people, I think, are already sorting those stations into two piles. So go beyond the playlist and think about what you do with that playlist, because you're going to lose the playlist war to Pandora anyway.
Well, that's the point. You're going to lose it because it's a utilitarian function. And I think that the... I think that everybody dealing with the internet runs the risk of being just basically evaporated into a utilitarian ocean. I consider radio stations platform, whether they're the media station on the internet or the radio station on the air. I think platform is important, and you hear a lot of people saying content is king. You know, the heck with platform. Well, we have to have platform is like the boat on the ocean. The internet is a ground. The internet is not a medium. It's not a platform. It's a ground. It's like the sidewalk, or it's like the air through which the airwaves, you know, the radio stations go through. You can't say I'm taking the air to bring my program to the listener, you know. No. And a lot of people haven't, they don't understand media theory enough to sort all those terms out. So when people say content is king, well, yeah, content is king, except you have to have a box office to make any money with it. And the box office, the turnstile, the counter, the cash register, the cash box is how you make money.
From a content creation standpoint, radio should be wary of self-segregation because you hear the current debate in New York about charter schools, for instance. And in public schools, you fling open the doors and everyone is welcome. And the charter schools are only for certain students. Is the analogy that the transmitters are becoming the charter schools and platforms like this, Talkers Radio, podcasters who are tweeting out snack size audio or video bits or creating on YouTube, is that the public school? Is Talkers Radio and the creative way that folks are fooling around here and trying things like us back in college radio before the segregation of radio made us pass an audition to say a phony name and sit between turntables and read what was on the index cards.
And do the format and sound like the station.
And I was thrilled to. In my hometown, Springfield, Massachusetts, I had to be Steve Douglas for 2 years, but I was willing to sit between the turntables to be on 1270 because it was that special to me.
Were you the guy that debated Abraham Lincoln?
It seemed that long ago, but I just wanted to be on WSPR. It was that special.
Well, and that was because we were into the art form of broadcasting on radio. In other words, the radio station itself was an art form.
Right.
Each record, each thing you did on it was little bits of an art form, but the actual format was a work of art. As a matter of fact, I used to write articles in R&R and back in the old days to program directors saying, be careful that you're aware of what you're programming. Some people format their programs. Other people program their formats. They actually believe that their format is what people are listening to.
Right.
And you hear guys going, we made some major changes. We're going to do better in the Arbitron. What did you do? We changed where we put the break. You know, we changed how often we say the call letters. And that they see is like why people would listen. So I used to use terms like curb your dogma and, you know, stay aware of the reality of why people listen to radio and what radio really is. But form and content are always capsizing. A lot of people don't know the difference, and they think that they're selling the cup as opposed to the coffee.
And to your point about music radio, watch what's going on in talk radio. Look at Ellen taking the selfie at the Oscars. Big Poppy, David Ortiz, taking the selfie when the president welcomed the world champion Red Sox to the White House, both sponsored, it was later revealed, by Samsung. It was product placement. Look at YouTube, which many people do instead of TV or cable every night. We're going to be naive and inch toward extinction if we still think it's we talk, you listen. People intend to participate. In talk radio, it is more overt, but your whole preaching it out dogma about retaking control of the music culture on music radio, it's not by honing the playlist.
It's
by making it special via storytelling and letting them tell some stories, too.
And getting back to what I said before, getting into the culture of radio, the psychology of radio, the abstract intelligence of radio, and understanding how to manipulate that playlist and present it in a way that turns the pure play services into tower records.
Right.
I mean, when I was programming radio stations before the internet, we didn't walk around worried about record stores. They could buy the songs. Why would they need, if they could buy the songs and play them on their Victrolas,
right,
why would they need us? What's different about today?
Well, it's friction-free. It is so much easier for them to end-run us because it's all been digitized.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to get in a car and burn fossil fuel and go buy a hard copy somewhere. You remember the penalty you'd pay if you didn't rewind a video cassette? Seems quaint now. Radio's got to step up to time shifting. I just upgraded to the HD DVR from DirecTV, and the TV listings got even less interesting. because it'll just catch every episode of Bates Motel because I told it to. Radio has got to get better at the on-demand culture that is expressing itself everywhere but AM/FM consumption.
Or perhaps radio has to become more astute at presenting real-time stuff that is immediate, is pressing, and people will need. Otherwise, you're really creating podcasts. Time shifting means podcasts, as far as I'm concerned, and that's fine. But now you're putting yourself in the same category as everybody out there on the internet. What about creating reasons to tune in and hear something that is immediate and now? There are many things that can be done that way.
If you haven't fired all the news people.
Bingo.
But don't consider time-shifted audio merely a podcast, already a dated term, because that's how they're using stuff. We've got to get better at spitting it out, branding it, and sponsoring it in every way we can, especially the ways that they are now favoring.
Do you really think podcasting is a dated term?
Well, it was all about iPod. You later made the point, why don't we consider POD as POD, programming on demand? But there was a point where suddenly everyone had an iPod, and then just as suddenly they didn't. Because iPhone came along, and why did you need a dedicated music device when you can put the music on your phone?
Yeah. Maybe we should call them podcasting.
Yeah, sure, right, yeah. Yeah.
Well, people still say my iPod, my iPad, I don't know, something with an I and something with a P and a D.
So beyond our propensity to regard on-demand audio as something smaller than the transmitter, the fact that we have the transmitter makes it bigger than the other Internet content creators. I work a lot with the sales departments at the stations I consult, and we actually database local advertisers. We go through the yellow pages with interns, and we database on a spreadsheet local advertisers with websites in their yellow pages ad. And then we look at the websites, and we decide which ones suck and which ones are great. And the ones that are great, his angst is bad server stats. And you can tell them, based on the research we've seen, with a straight face, take this thing out for a spin for 6 weeks, and if we haven't changed the metric of your server traffic, don't ever give me another dime. We train the reps to say, great website, but unless we tell our QM, how will anyone know it's there? And if the website sucks, offer to make them a microsite.
We only have a couple of minutes left, so a couple of quick questions. You do work with a lot of independent stations. Now, one gets the impression looking at the industry from afar that it's all big mega corporations because they do own most of the stations and they own most of the big stations. But is there any kind of an independently owned small group, local standalone market left? And is it on the way up or is it on the way down?
The only big market, big company station I work for, WRKO in Boston, I happened into because I followed the GM there from a prior situation where I consulted his group elsewhere. But other than that, all of my clients who are radio stations are the cool kids. They are what we used to call mom and pop. And they're doing things you'd never get permission to do from a big company in a big market, and they're making money. And the biggest ideas happen in the smallest markets, and wasn't it always this way? You remember when the NAB radio show was a robust, colorful, heavily populated bazaar of ideas, pre-deregulation, pre-1996. You go to one of these things in the 80s in New Orleans, no one hotel could contain all the hospitality suites. There was creativity anywhere. And it's different now. That's the stuff you get in the small markets. But even back then, when you went to the convention sessions, the guys from the big markets were all posturing and posing and preening. And I'd be scribbling as fast as I could in the small market idea exchange because these guys were turning ideas into dough.
All right. But in a nutshell, are you optimistic that there's a future or at least an immediate future for growth in the independent radio market?
More so than from the big Wall Street funded, debt hemorrhaging, publicly financed mega groups. Absolutely.
And we talked earlier, and this will be the last question, and obviously we're going to do more of this, and hopefully you'll be doing some programs of your own on Talkers Radio. We talked about music radio. We're talking about talk radio. For the time being, as long as there is still an AM and an FM platform, which hopefully there will be for years as opposed to days, this is kind of a leading question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think that talk radio should be kind and root for music radio to continue to be vital based on the premise that all radio is better off if there's both music and talk on the AM and FM dial?
Yes, especially given the way AM is technically deteriorating. We got to be kinder to each other. And sales has been preaching this out for years. Don't just go out and tell the Ford dealer you heard on WXXX that they should be on WYYY instead. Talk up radio. Don't talk down other radio.
Great way for people to get in touch with you on the web is, give us, what website do you want people to go to?
It's hollandcook.com, HollandCooke.com. And please follow me on Twitter, at Holland Cook.
And I hope you enjoyed the conversation conducted with Holland Cook that was recorded in a car outside of Starbucks. And if you are in New York or plan to be in New York on Friday, June 20th, and I registered for the Talkers New York 2014 conference, Holland Cook is one of our special speakers there. You will get to see him in action. And if you want more information about that, go to the website talkers.com. And all the information is there for you to register if you are a member of the media. I'm Michael Harrison, and this is Talkers Radio. You're listening to The Talker Show. Coming up next, a conversation with WFAN sports talk personality and legendary rock jock, Richard Neer. That's next when The Talker Show on Talkers Radio continues.
Here in the laboratory that is Talkers Radio,
we're developing the kind of talk radio that makes sense for you now
and in the future.
I'm Brent Seltzer.
And I'm Meg McDonald. Join us every Monday through Friday,
3 to 5 Eastern Time and noon to 2 Pacific Time
on the Brent and Meg radio thingy.
Attitudes are changing, and those changes need to be reflected in what you hear
and how you can be heard on the next generation of talk radio.
The Brent and Meg radio thingy gives you all sides of the story, whatever the story is.
Because whatever the story is, it's all about you.
So when you want to imagine the unimaginable,
count on the unexpected,
and maybe even laugh out loud in ways you haven't for too long a time, just join us Monday through Friday,
3 to 5 Eastern and noon to 2 Pacific Time on the Brent and Meg radio thingy.
Hear us here on Talkers Radio.
His name is Robbie Student. Interesting name. Interesting guy. Robbie Student is a philosopher. He's a record producer. He's a political observer. And he isn't afraid to open his mouth. But he ain't no wonk. He's a person. He's a husband. A dad. A real regular guy. Okay, maybe he's not so regular. But I mean, he's not weird or anything like that. He's somewhat of a loose cannon. Although I mean that in a completely positive way. Okay, mostly positive. You never know. Robbie Student. He's the kind of guy you just want to hang with a couple of hours. Or maybe just a few minutes. He can be hard to take. But then again, so are most people hard to take. Whatever.
Robbie Student can be heard live here on Talkers Radio with a new show called Robbie Student's Bite the Hand, Sundays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. That's Robbie Student's Bite the Hand, Sundays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on Talkers Radio.
Every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, well-known talk radio and television personality Alan Combs hosts a very special and different one-hour program called Healed Planet with Alan Combs. It's quite a departure from the Alan Combs we all hear on Fox News radio and television. It has very little to do with politics and everything to do with cosmic consciousness. Healed Planet with Alan Combs explores parapsychology, astrophysics, quantum mechanics, the environment, the meaning of dreams, synchronicity, theories of life after death, 21st century spirituality, and the mysteries of the universe, all in one dynamic, open-minded, leading-edge radio program. Don't miss Healed Planet with Alan Combs, Sunday evenings at 8 ET, right here on the Verbal Gymnasium of the World Wide Web, Talkers Radio.
All right, continuing now with Talkers Radio and The Talker Show here on Talkers Radio. I'm Michael Harrison. I'm the publisher of Talkers Magazine and the host of this program, and hope you're enjoying the conversations we have with people in the media. And the next conversation is with Richard Neer. Richard Neer and I go back all the way to when we were in college, And we met at WLIR on Long Island, which we worked at prior to it becoming a rock station. We were we broke into radio working at WLIR, and we played beautiful music, as it was called in those days, orchestras such as Percy Faith and his orchestra, Mantovani, Andre Castellanos. And yeah, those were the days. And we were kids playing music for people that are as old as we are now. We talked with deep voices back in those days to sound more mature. And as a couple of years went by, we had the opportunity to transition the radio station into a rock station. And for many, many decades, it was one of the leading album-oriented rock stations in America, alternative station, underground station, progressive, all the different terms for that genre of broadcasting that radio station went through. Shortly after we transitioned it to rock, Richard and I both went to New York City, where we worked at WNEW-FM in its golden era of progressive rock. So we go back a long way. Today, Richard is a... he's been there for over 20 years. It's hard to believe so much time has gone by. Richard is a host of a sports talk show on one of the leading and certainly the first all sports radio station in America. One of the leading sports talk stations as well, WFAN. And we occasionally get together and chat it up a bit. And here's an example of our conversation. It's funny, Richard and I were just kidding around as we began this conversation. And I told the producer to put up a fresh reel-to-reel of Ampex. And we've really come a long way in the technical end of radio, haven't we, Richard? It's crazy.
I'm just amazed at what the prowess of what has happened. I was telling you the other day that when I left rock radio, I decided, you know, I don't need a huge record collection. So I gave it away, or I went to Barnes & Noble, got like a dime for all my vinyl, you know, a dime each or something like that. And I had everything on CD. And I and I got one of those turntables that would put records onto CD. And then I found it was stupid to do that because you could just buy them cheaply. Like if you wanted the Righteous Brothers Greatest Hits, you could probably get it for $5 on CD. So I got all this stuff on CD. And then it occurred to me a couple of years ago that I have this huge CD library. Do I ever listen to them? No. So I got a flash card or an SD card. I said, well, I'll put a few songs on here. I put a few songs on, and I said, oh, I must be no more room on this card. And it turns out I had barely scratched the surface. To make a long story short, I got a 16-gigabyte flash drive. I've put every song in creation that I ever liked on it. I've got about 1,500 songs on it, of classic rock I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a tenth of the storage capacity. So I've got this little thing half the size of a fountain pen that I've got every song I've ever liked on.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
What's amazing is that you can keep track of every song you've ever liked, and that alone. I mean, if I had to sit down and think about every song I ever liked, that would be one of those. That's like name everybody you've ever known. You know.
Well, but I'm exaggerating because you know what happens every day. I say, oh, there's a song I didn't put on there. Well, right. I'll just put this on, and you can just keep adding to it.
Well, that's one of the things that, that's one of the things that drives me crazy about radio formats today. I mean, the music side. And, you know, with all due respect to my friends at Classic Rock Radio, come on, there are more songs than you're playing that would increase ratings before you reach to that point of,
diminishing
returns.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of the word. Diminishing returns. True, if you play too many songs, your ratings are going to go down. But if you don't play enough and you keep playing the same ones over and over, like, you know, again, with all due respect to Steve Miller, how many times can you listen to Jet Airliner or Keep on Rocking Me, Baby? I mean, why that and not certain Grateful Dead songs, or why that and not certain Bruce Springsteen songs that are six or seven tracks deep? You know, why don't we hear Jungle Land anymore? I could just go on and on and on. I mean, why don't we hear Long Time Gone by Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young anymore on rock radio? You don't, because somehow somebody somewhere decided to eliminate it from the playlist and it just never came back. You know why I thought of that song? Why I just came up with that?
Long Time Gone?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Every now and then, I go to my DVDs. And actually, this wasn't even on my DVD. This last time, it was on demand on the cable system. I saw Woodstock, the movie.
Oh.
So I think, yeah, you know, I'm going to watch Woodstock again. Just flip around it. You know, it's great. Even on the on-demand, you can flip around the different parts of it and see a couple of performances. And I realized I had not watched the opening credits, the opening scenes to Woodstock in years. And I was always under the impression that it started out with Canned Heat going up the country.
Right.
That's what I always thought. You know, every time I ever heard Canned Heat, you don't hear them anymore, but Canned Heat going up the country, I think of Woodstock starting. But no, Going Up the Country is at the beginning, but it's not the first song. The first song is Long Time Gone by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Funny you should mention that, because that was a song. It had been out for a while when the Woodstock movie came out, and I probably had heard it, but it never registered. I went to see that movie. I might have even gone to see it with you. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But we saw it in a big theater. And when those harmonies, and it seems to be a long, appears to be a long. Mm-hmm. When that, I heard that on big speakers,
right.
You know, that harmony, I go, whoa, this song is great. Yeah. And ever since then, I've loved that song.
You do not hear that song on the radio. The song on stations that claim to be classic rock stations. Classic rock. And that song is not on the same song that opens the ultimate classic rock movie of all time, Woodstock.
Well, you mentioned Bruce Springsteen before, and I have a friend who's a disc jockey at a big classic rock station in the New York, New Jersey area, and of course that's where Bruce is from.
Yeah.
And I said, so when the new Bruce album came out, one of the new Bruce albums a year ago or so, I said, so are you playing it? And he said, no, we're not. It's new. It's not a. I said, but it's Bruce Springsteen, New York. Come on. He goes, no, it's new Bruce Springsteen. We only play old Bruce Springsteen, and we really don't play much of that. I said, really?
What?
He said, yeah, we play about five songs.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, New York, five songs. And he goes, yeah, he doesn't test well. We do these tests, and people don't like his songs.
Yeah,
said, well,
yeah.
Whenever he plays Giant Stadium, for example, 80,000 people, he can sell out a week.
Mm-hmm.
Those people don't count. Well, they like to see him in person, but they don't like to hear his music on the radio.
Yeah, these are rules that have somehow become part of conventional wisdom,
yeah.
Handed down through the decades from one programming consultant or one programmer to another, and they suddenly become conventional wisdom when, in fact, they're not true. Also, relying on research that is not, shall we say, really scientifically executed, really extensive, deep, large sample, good questions, right people, research. You can prove almost anything you want to. You can prove any notion and justify it by manipulating statistics or manipulating questions or just interpreting the research however you want. My feeling is that everything, and I say this at a lot of the places I speak in the industry, and I talk to broadcasters about this all the time, any art form, if you look at any creative process, any invention, any revelation, any eureka moment in the history of the human race started with somebody's intuition, somebody's gut, somebody made it up. It hit somebody out of the blue, and then they did it. And then each succeeding generation of practitioners researched, justified, formulated, corporatized, and then it becomes subject to, well, it didn't test well. What didn't test well? What does that mean? And forgive the rant, but I guess that's what this program is about. It's about media people talking about the media. And again, I want to say what I said before, with all due respect to my friends programming classic rock, they do a good job for the most part, except in the area of song selection. And I actually do believe, And I guess this is blasphemous in some circles in the radio business. I do believe, Richard, that classic artists should be played on classic rock stations when they have a new song, even if it's only two or three plays, to give the audience a chance to stay up with what's happening in the culture.
Oh, I would agree with you. And you know, I also am a little sympathetic to the new stuff from the classic artists, because unfortunately, a lot of the stuff doesn't measure up. A lot of the stuff sounds either formulaic, like they're trying to recreate what they once did, or they're trying to totally break away from once what they once did and what they were good at and going into a different sound or a different genre, and they're not that good at it. So I don't say that when a new record from whoever comes out that you should play it as if it were a classic. But I do agree with you that you sprinkle it in, you give people a chance, and see if they like it. See if you like it. See if it wears well. And I don't know what the harm is if you were to say, hey, there's a new Bruce Springsteen record out. Let's listen to it and see what we think.
Mm-hmm.
And then they listen to it and you go, oh, you know what? I think, Born in the USA is a lot better. But hey, you heard it. What do you think?
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Also,
and they don't do that.
They can also tap into their preoccupation with social media. I mean, you know, social media, like us on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. All that stuff could be used very effectively in cases like that by tapping into the audience and saying, "What'd you think of the new Paul McCartney?"
But that tends
song?
To be very unscientific, though, doesn't it? I mean, those are your.
Well, it's unscientific, but at least it gives the it gives a meaning to the playing of the song. In other words, those who are listening can feel that they're participating. You're creating interest in the song. In other words, Paul McCartney comes out with a brand new song. He hasn't been in the studio in over 10 years. And he comes out with a song called Next. And it sounds like a Beatles song. You and I talked about it on a different show that we were having a conversation. Or maybe we talked about it on this show. I don't remember. But the point is, he comes out with a song that sounded like it might have come off of the White Album or that era of the Beatles. It wasn't particularly a great Beatles song. But it sounded like a Beatles song. It didn't sound like, McCartney and the Silly Love Songs era. It sounded like a Beatles song. That's interesting to me. That, to me, is interesting enough to create even one moment of interest on any kind of a radio station where the people might remember McCartney. And to say, hey, what do you think of this? So then you open it up to Facebook, you open it up to Twitter, you open it up to email, any kind of digital media, social media, and you do a little survey, and then you're done with it. And you say,
didn't they used to do that? Was it on the Dick Clark show where they would rate records? Mm-hmm. I can dance to it. It's got a good beat. I like it. I can hum it. There would be ratings for these things, and they just kind of randomly, although I'm sure if we knew the inside story, these kids that they selected weren't random at all, but they would pick some kids, and they'd sit there, and they'd kind of be a little panel judging whether they liked a new record from Dion and the Belmonts or whatever.
Well, that's where the joke, and you can dance to it, came.
Yeah.
And you can dance to it. But do you remember also on radio they had, we sound like a couple of old farts reminiscing. But, there's a danger of doing that when you talk about great stuff historically. But do you remember when they had the Battle of the Bands? And they would have, again, the telephone was used for voting. And in those days, the telephone really was a primitive form of social media. I mean, what is social media? Social media is an extension, a modern technological extension of letter writing, the mail, and telephoning. Writing a letter or making a phone call. And that's basically what social media is today.
Or even let's go back further to the days of the American Revolution or the early Christianity. They would print after Gutenberg invented the printing press. Or they even before that, they would put out flyers, pamphlets, handouts. They would hand them out in the street. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's different. Like that. That's different. Handing out pamphlets and flyers and printing is mass media. That's newspapers, radio, television, and books. When I'm talking about social media, was telegraphs. The telegraph was social media. The telephone, social media. Writing a letter and sending it, social media. Perhaps.
But if you're in a community and you're trying to reach other people in the community en masse, I guess we're doing semantics here, but, social media now, and I've had this argument with my in-laws, where Facebook is open to everybody on Facebook, And there are certain things that you don't want everybody to know. You only want your family, your friends to know. And to me, and this is the old-fashioned part, it means more to me to get an email, to get a phone call, to get a personal, you know, note, as opposed to, well, it's on Facebook, everybody can read it. You know, that to me is much more social media than mass media, which I think Facebook has become a little bit mass, hasn't it?
Facebook has become a mass media on the social media platform. In other words, it's sort of like a party line.
Good way to put it.
It's like a party line on the telephone. And of course, this stuff all does overlap. What we're really witnessing is a breakdown in the 21st century of the concept of the public, of mass anything. The whole idea of the masses, of there being mass consciousness, of mass taste, popular culture that is a mass popular culture, that's a very 20th century concept. And we're seeing that breakdown. And with the democratization of the internet, we're seeing social media taking on sort of mini versions of mass media where people are able to have their own little platforms for hundreds and even thousands of their closest quote-unquote friends. Well, so it does get complicated. But all I'm saying is back to what we're originally pointing out. There's so much that could be done in music radio today for radio stations. And yes, I still believe in the radio station. I'm certainly a proponent of digital and internet broadcasting. I've been one of the first people in the business to be talking about it. But I also would love to see the radio station stay alive as long as possible. And for it to do that, I believe the radio station has to maintain ownership of the music culture, something it used to have and something that it has or is on its way to rapidly losing. And
well, you know, even that became formularized. I mean, in the early 90s, when I was still doing rock radio, and it wasn't necessarily classic rock at that point, they would say, you know, you have to come on every hour, once an hour, and mention a concert that's coming up. And that way people will think you're hip, and people will think that, you know, and it was imaging as opposed to living it, which back in the 60s and 70s, we were at those concerts. We wanted to be at those concerts. We would go to them and then almost recreate them when we got on the air the next day. Oh, I went to this Creedence concert last night, and they played Proud Mary, and here's a little bit of some of the songs they played. And this was a highlight. And it became kind of later on, well, just image that. Don't actually do it. Just make it seem like you did it.
What you are saying now is an example of what I said before, that it starts out with somebody's gut. It starts out with somebody's intuition, with somebody's reality, with somebody's own juices. And then it gets emulated by somebody who was with them and knows them. And then it gets formulated. And then as with each passing layer of practitioner, it becomes corporatized. It becomes formulaic. And it becomes mass produced. And then it gets subject to research.
And then it becomes bland and boring.
Exactly.
And rote.
And the powers that be behind it always want to spread it further and further to a larger and larger customer base, which further waters it down. The more people you try to please, the more you have to find a consensus and water down the art form. And that therein lies the syndrome. And you've just provided an excellent example of it. Look, I just want, if anybody's tuning into this and saying, boy, this guy or these guys are drowning in their own nostalgia. This is not nostalgia, folks. I am, and I know Richard is, we are very, very much for progress and evolution. However, progress in the arts and an evolution in any kind of the humanities is based upon a respect and a knowledge for the good things that have come before, with the courage to break the mold. But when you don't recognize what came before and you operate in a bubble of the now, which is something that really marks these times, where the past was anything more than 3 months ago and is ancient history and no longer pertinent, you can't develop any kind of evolving, progressive, growing, improving scene. And that scares me. And that's something that we're experiencing right now, I believe, in popular culture.
Well, I think part of the problem, Michael, is that there are so many outlets now. There is broadcast television, broadcast radio, there's internet, there's cable, there's satellite, there's now streaming with Netflix and Amazon and all the other places where you can get it. And I'm mystified at, like, well, where do I get my stuff from? And I'm kind of picking and choosing, and I'm all over the place. Whereas when we were growing up, there were the three major networks. That was it. Everybody watched The Ed Sullivan Show. Everybody watched Johnny Carson. You know, we had these things in common. Now, we're so diversified. There's so much out there.
Yeah, but you say
that we're kind of creating our own media stations.
Well, this is inevitable. But you said something troubling, and I don't know if you really meant what you said. You said part of the problem. I don't know if that's a problem. I think the problem is how we handle this as opposed to it being a problem. Diversity, more channels, different outlets, different ways of getting things is not a problem in my mind. To me, a problem would be if we only had three networks today and we were still watching the Ed Sullivan Show.
Right.
That would be a problem.
It's a problem for those who are the purveyors of the media. In other words, the media people who used to have it easy when, okay, we put this show on, you don't like it, well, you'll go to ABC or you'll go to CBS, but you'll come to us eventually. Now, finding an audience... And audiences are so divergent. I listen to classical music. I listen to country music. I listen to rock. I listen to folk, jazz even once in a while. So how do you put together one single media outlet that pleases me? And the answer is you can't.
You don't. That's what I said before. There's no more mass appeal. There's no more public. There's no more mass consciousness. It's gone. It's a 20th century concept. But it doesn't mean... that those platforms that are run by corporations that are extremely corporate compared to the corporations that ran the media 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they're far more corporate and less artistic, less grassroots, and less streety than the media was in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
They are stagnating because of this quote-unquote problem that you cite. It's not a problem. What it is it's a challenge. And it's a challenge that we, as professional people in the media, have to rise to, or we will be passed by. We will be passed by. The institutions that we still hold dear will be gone. There'll be no more magazines. There'll be no more books. There'll be no more radio stations, TV stations. There'll be no movie theaters and no film industry as we could imagine it could be, or remember it as it was. It'll just disappear. It'll go the way of vaudeville, go the way of smoke signals. And there's nothing written in stone that these things have to continue. I'd like to see them continue because I think they have value as vehicles of culture. But they have to evolve, and they have to take their rightful places within the larger communication scene that technology has brought to us as a gift to humanity. I guess you know what it is. We're in a very chaotic period right now. And I think that this chaotic transitional period between the 20th and the 21st centuries is going to go on for a number of years. I think that it'll settle down probably 10 or 15 years from now.
Does it come down to, Michael, a matter of trust? In other words, you know, back in the day of so-called progressive rock radio, there were disc jockeys who were arbiters of taste, and their taste was respected, and they would play you something new, and it kind of had their stamp on it. You trusted them. They weren't going to give you junk.
Right.
Now I read a magazine, a newspaper, something. I am not so sure that I'm getting the honest opinion of the person writing, or I'm getting a corporatized, well, you know, this is, I'm watching the CBS Morning News and I'm seeing all these great shows on CBS and I don't see a mention of another great show that might be on a rival network. This synchronicity, this synergy has kind of made me think I'm being sold something as opposed to being I'm hipped something really good that you should get into that has nothing to do with making a profit for me, but because I think it's good. I don't trust the arbiters of taste as much as I did once.
In other words, you think that the profit motive and the sales end of media has taken over, and that the individual taste of the critic, the pundit, the curator has gone by the wayside. the independent voice. I think you might be right. And that's a major sociological issue that we face today. It has to do with corruption. It really does.
The question is,
have we become an increasingly corrupt society in the last 5, 10, 15 years? And I think if you ask most people, and they give it some thought, and they do some real contemplation about this, day-to-day life, are we facing more corruption in the atmosphere in which we live, in the environment in which we live? Corruption on every level, stores, advertising, relationships, business deals, just the general world we live in. Is it becoming more corrupt?
Well,
I tend to think it is.
It even goes down to the grassroots where, you know, when a product would come out and the internet was first starting and they were selling you things, they would have reviews from people and, oh, yeah, I tried this product. It's really good. Or, hey, I tried it. It's a piece of junk. Don't buy it. And of course, then corporate America got hip to that and started paying people to write favorable reviews for their products. And you can't trust them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you really don't trust, the media or the person on the media to give you the straight story for your own good. You think, okay, well, they're trying to sway me. They're trying to bend me towards something.
And there's only
not
one
necessarily
answer.
Towards something good for me, but because they make money on it.
There's only one answer to this, and I think we should conclude our conversation because time is running out. As this being the answer, we should turn to politicians. We should put our trust in politicians. They know what's best for us, don't you think? And that's why we need more politicians and more government. Richard, thank you for joining us on this conversation. It was certainly quite sparky, and I want to just leave everybody with one thought. Even though there were a lot of expressions like when I was growing up, back in the old days, here's how we used to do it when I was a boy.
Yeah.
Please,
get off my lawn.
Please forgive us. We are not advocating going back to 1968. All right, Richard Neer, thank you. Oh, yeah, listening back to that conversation now, I definitely felt like we're on the edge of that cliff. But, you know, I may be beating it to death, but it is a major issue. That we do want to move forward. We do. I certainly embrace technology. I embrace forward motion. I embrace progressive thinking, and I would much rather go to the future than go to the past. And I actually think that life today and life tomorrow, basically taking all things into consideration, is better than it was in the past. We tend to glorify the past and look, you know, at it through rose-colored glasses. But the truth of the matter is the future is just okay by me. That being said, and I mentioned it earlier in the program, it's very important to go into the future with an understanding of the past. If you throw the past away completely, you cannot learn from it and derive the benefit and the evolution and the progress that was made to that point. Okay, enough said. But obviously, it's a big topic of mine. I'm Michael Harrison. Hope you've enjoyed this installment of The Talker Show. We had Holland Cook and Richard Neer on it. And please stick around and listen to Talkers Radio, some of the experimental program we have. Talkers Radio is a service of Talkers Magazine at talkers.com. Talkers Magazine, the Bible of talk radio and the new talk media.